Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
We welcome you to our show tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? I'm your host, Doris Hansen, and we are here to talk about polygamy. We're broadcasting live from Salt Lake City, Utah, and we are a telephone call-in program, and we do invite your phone calls. Our phone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. However, if you would prefer to communicate with us by email, our email address is tv@aboutpolygamy.com. Either way, we'd like to hear your comments and your questions regarding our show tonight or about polygamy. All of our previous programs can be watched on the website www.whatloveisthis.tv. If you know someone who is outside of our viewing area, you might tell them to go onto that website and they'll be able to pick up any program that they have missed or maybe that you have missed. And if you or someone that you know is in a polygamy group and you would like some help or would like to know what we can do to help you, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org, shieldandrefuge.org. If you or someone you know is being abused or perhaps you are being forced into something that you don't want to do, you should call 911 if it's an emergency, but you can also call our toll-free number, which is 877-425-9993. We will do anything and everything that we can to help you. If you are in a polygamy group or if you've left a polygamy group and you believe that a discussion group setting would be helpful to you, we'd like to invite you to a quiet, non-confrontational discussion group we've entitled Life After Polygamy. We meet the third Monday of every month in the Salt Lake City area, and we would love to have you join us if it would be of interest to you. You can email us, tv@aboutpolygamy.com, for the details of that discussion group. Our next meeting is going to be May 18th, Monday at 6:30 p.m. And remember that we will give the DVD, Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, to anyone who has been or is in a polygamy group. If you believe that that would interest you or help you, we would love to send that to you. All we need to know is how to get it to you. Or if you would rather watch it online, you can go to www.livinghopeutah.org and you can watch the entire DVD online undetected. Or if you know someone who is in a polygamy group and you think that that DVD would help them, just let me know and we'll find a way to get it to them or give us instructions of how we can get it to them. Tonight, we're going to talk about myth number 9 of why the early Mormons practiced polygamy and also some of the practices of early Mormon polygamy. And myth number 9 is the women in the polygamous marriages preferred to be in those marriages. They thought of their sister wives as actual sisters, and they had no trouble sharing their husbands. Polygamous families were very close and loving. Now we're going to bring the truth to bear on this myth, and we pick this information out of historical journals, personal diaries. We don't just pull them out of the air. We do research to find the answers to what these myths are that people have been told about early Mormon polygamy. Actually, the women in polygamous marriages did not prefer polygamy, but most of them were threatened with hell and damnation. According to Section 132 in the Doctrine and Covenants, if they didn't practice polygamy, they would be damned. Now, as far as their thinking that their sister wives were like sisters to them, that's not really very amazing, since most of them, their sister wives were their sisters, since men would marry pairs of sisters all the time. That was not unusual. And their homes, however, were competitive, and they were filled with jealousies. And the women did care if they had to share their husbands. They didn't want to do that. In fact, I'd like to mention right now, it is not evil for a woman to want her husband exclusively. That's something that God has built into us, and it's not wrong. And by the way, God has required that the husband is supposed to love his wife exclusively as well. During those times, the women were taught that only polygamous men could exalt them and bring them through the resurrection. So, of course, they would want to live polygamy for that reason. Although perhaps they were not physically forced into polygamy, many women were mentally and spiritually and emotionally driven into it. I would like to make some quotes tonight from an author, Mrs. T.B.H. Stenhouse, who wrote a book in 1872. It was published, and it's called The Exposé of Polygamy in Utah by Mrs. T.B.H. Stenhouse. Mrs. Stenhouse was there. She lived in the Utah Territory during the time that polygamy was all the rage in the territory. She and her husband practiced polygamy. She intimately knew many women who were polygamous wives, and she also knew many, actually, of Brigham Young's wives. And I would like to make this quote from someone who was there and knew what she was talking about. She said, "If there be any women who prefer polygamy, they be few and far between." Well, that kind of demolishes myth number 9 right there. She was there and she knew. She also said, "Where a man has more than one wife, his wives are careful to conceal their real feelings from him for fear of creating a prejudice against themselves in favor of the other wife. I know from experience that Mormon husbands are the very last to learn of their wives' feelings." She said that if women would only express themselves freely, they would tell of their heartaches, of their sleepless nights, and of their loneliness, and that their hearts knew no joy or happiness. The next statement that she makes, I really would ask that any woman who's in polygamy now and is watching this show, I would really ask that you'd listen carefully to her next statement. This is what she says. "Heaven help those poor women. If they could only know for themselves that this continued sacrifice was not necessary, their very hearts would sing for joy." I hope that women in polygamy who heard this understood what Mrs. Stenhouse is saying. She found out, as I have found out, and many other women that have come out of polygamous situations have discovered, plural marriage simply is not required. God has never commanded it. God does not require that of you. And that's what she wants you to know. And that's why we do the show. Joseph Smith threatened Emma with destruction if she didn't allow him to take more wives. And so the subsequent practice of polygamy would bring threats upon women through the generations that they would be destroyed if they didn't live polygamy. In fact, the polygamy groups today, or most of them today, the leadership and the parents of the girls will continue to do the same thing, threaten you with hell and damnation if you do not practice polygamy. And so, to sum up myth number 9, few women willingly accepted polygamy. And most of those who did only did so because they were afraid they would lose their salvation. A choice of one cloaked in fear is really no choice at all. So that's the end of myth number 9, and I hope that you understand people in those days did not like polygamy any more than they do in these days. It's a cruel way to live. I have a news article that I want to read tonight. It was taken off the internet from the website worldmag.com on December 15th of 2008. I've purposely waited several months to read this, and you'll understand why as I read it, but I thought it would be of interest to read it tonight. And this is what it says. Leland Freeborn calls himself a gimpy old crippled guy from Parowan, Utah. Freeborn also calls himself a prophet. After a 1975 airplane crash left him in a three-week coma, he emerged on the other side, able to foresee the future, he claims. Freeborn and his followers are former Mormons, having broken fellowship over the issues of polygamy and what they saw as shoddy interpretation of the true vision of the Latter-day Saints founder Joseph Smith. Now the tiny group combs Smith's writings and the Bible for warnings about the end of the age. Freeborn says that it is upon us. A disaster, he said. Now listen, we've got three prophecies coming up here. The first one is, a disaster will prevent Barack Obama from taking office. The second prediction is, U.S. riots are likely to hit before Christmas. And the third prediction is, a nuclear war is imminent. Now, I wonder if he is going to redefine the definition of the word imminent. He says, I really believe we are out of time. I really do. What does all that have to do with anything? Well, we have another splinter group off the Mormon Church, just like all the other polygamy groups. We have another false prophet because time is the enemy of false prophets and false prophecies, and everything he said failed. And that is the test of a prophet. Even one prophet, one prophecy that a prophet gives, if it doesn't come to pass, he's a false prophet and you're to ignore him. Okay, we're going to talk tonight about a subject that really comes up quite a bit as we discuss different aspects of the general belief in this area. And it is faith without works. Is it dead or are we saved by grace through faith? It seems that most of the times when we mention that we are saved by grace alone, through faith alone, we're challenged with the rebuttal, well, faith without works is dead. And so those who want to talk about the salvation by grace in the Bible, are kind of turned off because they only want to pick up on the works verses. Now, those who do that really don't understand what biblical grace is. It's almost like they pit the Bible against themselves. If James and Paul are in the boxing room fighting out the doctrine between them, or if God is contradictory to himself, they don't want to pick up on both of the teachings and reconcile them. Rather, they would rather pick and choose, or they redefine a word. So tonight we're going to look at this. Are we saved by grace through faith, or are we saved by works? Now, we know that the Bible is, all the scriptures, we're told, is by inspiration of God. So we know that everything that Paul taught when he said we're saved by grace through faith, and everything that James taught when he said that faith without works is dead, we know that they both were speaking from the heart of God. So which is it? Salvation by grace through faith? Salvation by works? Or is it salvation by grace after all we can do? The answer is really so simple that a child can and does understand it. And if a child can understand it, adults can too if they want to, if they want to listen. Now, we're going to look at the verses that are in question tonight, the verses that are used mostly for this controversy. They are in Ephesians 2, verses 8 through 10, and James chapter 2, verses 17 and verse 26. So let's look at Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 through 10. For by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them. Now that's the verses that we're saved by grace through faith. James chapter 2, verse 17 says, even so, faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. And James 2:26 says, "For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also." Okay, so is it salvation by grace alone, through faith alone? Let's answer the question, first of all, is it by grace after all you can do? Because that seems to be the general thinking around this area. Now, by definition, actually, it cannot be grace plus works. That is infinitely impossible. It's either all of grace or all of works, and I'll prove it from the Bible. Romans chapter 11, verse 6 says, "And if by grace, then it is no more of works, otherwise grace is no more grace. But if it be of works, then it is no more grace, otherwise works is no more work." Okay, so that tells us that it cannot be grace plus works. It's either all one or all the other. There is no mixture. And if you believe you can mix the two to attain salvation, you don't know what biblical grace really means. Now, in the Ephesians verses that we read, Paul is talking about how we're saved. It says so right in the verses. And in the verses that James is talking about, he's talking to a different audience. He's saying, don't say you're saved if you don't have works to prove it. In other words, once a person is saved, they're going to be accomplishing works. So we have two different types of audiences that Paul and James were talking to. That's very important to determine the audience when you're trying to interpret a passage. And the third point I want to make should clear it up completely. Let's look at Ephesians 8 through 10 again. Verse 8, very clearly, we are saved by grace through faith. No special interpretation skills are needed there. There's no question what that says. We're saved by grace through faith. Verse 9, we are not saved by works. Absolutely. Again, that's easy to understand. No special interpretation skills. No questions needed. We are not saved by works. The key, of course, is verse 10. We are saved to do good works. And so we can take Ephesians 2, 8 through 9, which is what Paul is saying. We're saved by grace through faith. And Ephesians 2, 10, which is what James is saying. We're saved to do good works. Paul is saying, don't even try to work for your salvation. James is saying, don't tell me you're saved unless you can prove it by a changed life. I like to call it getting the cart before the horse. The horse represents salvation and the cart represents works. You can't put the cart before the horse and get anywhere. You cannot go anywhere. You don't have the power with the cart all by itself. But when you put the horse first, which is grace through by faith, and you pull the cart behind you, you are going to attain your journey's end. And of course, that is heaven. And so I speak to polygamists or anyone else who is watching the show tonight who is depending upon good works of any kind to provide merit before God for you or get you into the gates of heaven. It isn't necessary and it won't work. And don't say that the works that you're doing in polygamy or any other kinds of works that you're doing proves that you're saved, because Ephesians chapter 2 verse 10 tells us that the works that we will do after we're saved are works that God has already prepared in advance for us to do. And He has already condemned polygamy, so He's not going to prepare polygamy for you to do to get saved. And so I hope that you won't, that you'll understand this and that you won't suffer your daily dose of pain in whatever works it is you're trying to achieve to get into heaven. Jesus paid it all on the cross. It is finished, He said. He said it was finished. You know, grace will save us, but truth is what sets us free. And I hope that you'll follow the truth. And if there's anyone who's been watching this tonight and you would like our notes, my notes on this, I would love to send them to you, a PDF file by email. If you want them, just email tv@aboutpolygamy.com and ask for them, and I'll be happy to send them to you. Now, in case you haven't noticed tonight, we don't have a guest. I thought I would just go through some of the things that we've kind of put on the back burner and also open up our email bag, which we're getting behind on, and some of our telephone calls that we've been a little bit behind on as well. And so I want to start with our biblical question from Walter, which he emailed me the following inquiry. And this is what Walter said. Deuteronomy 22, verses 28 through 29, suggests that if a man lays carnally with a woman and she is not betrothed, then the man must pay the father reparations and marry her and may not divorce her ever. Although this makes sense if both the man and the woman are single, if that man were married, then this would force him into polygamy. This is way out there. Do you have any insights to share on the matter? Thanks in advance. Yes, Walter, I do have some insights to share on the matter. First of all, I want to discuss two types of Bible readers. Now, there's more than two types, but I just want to discuss the two types right now. The first Bible reader are those who will read into a passage what they want it to say. And the second type that we're talking about will pull out of the text what it is actually saying. And then they will not read into it their preconceived notions of the subject matter or what it's teaching. They will also seriously consider the context, the verses around the passage that they're looking at, and that is called the context. Now, you've heard it said that people can make the Bible say just about anything they want. And I call that their personal filtering system, and they really can do that. People do it all the time. If a person has a pro-polygamy filter system, he will interpret passages that reflect his personal preference of polygamy, despite what the text says and what the context is actually teaching. Now, we know from other Bible reading that God condemns sexual sin. He condemns polygamy, promiscuity, homosexuality, incest, bestiality, adultery. And if you want to start your list, Leviticus 18 is a good place to begin, because there's a whole list all throughout the Old and New Testament of the sexual sins that God looks down upon. We know just five chapters earlier from Deuteronomy 22, which is where these verses are that you've asked about, that in Deuteronomy 17:17, God has prohibited polygamy. He told the kings, you are not to multiply wives unto yourself. So let's look at the verses in question. Deuteronomy chapter 22, verses 28 and 29. If a man find a damsel that is a virgin, which is not betrothed, and lay hold on her and lie with her, and they be found, then the man that lay with her shall give unto the damsel's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife, because he hath humbled her. He may not put her away all his days. Now let's look at the context. That's the important part, remember, when we're studying a passage, the context. To establish the crime of rape. They're establishing a crime there. This is an example that God has given. And so the crime of rape is established, and then the punishment for the crime. We read that if a man rapes a girl, he has to pay more or less kind of like a dowry to the father, and then is required to marry her. What we're seeing here and in surrounding verses are their crimes and punishments. We are not seeing whether a man is to be who is a criminal, who is a rapist, is to become a polygamist. That is not even the issue. And since God has already earlier pronounced that polygamy is not to be practiced, he wouldn't punish a married rapist by satisfying his lust to make him live polygamy with her. That just doesn't make any sense. We can know that God wouldn't command polygamy in one case and then command it again in another case. That is not the way God is. He doesn't show favoritism. He is not a respecter of persons, and God does not change. And so, Walter, in this example, the man would not even be married. And I would also like to mention, this is an example It isn't an actual happening, it's just an example that God has used in teaching the crimes and the punishments. Okay, we had a call. Let's go on to some phone calls now. We had a call on April 16th from Ralph of Salem, Utah, and he said, "Why are the polygamy groups so interested in outsiders? They seem to be recruiting." Well, Ralph, I think that most polygamy groups, whether they're actively or not recruiting, I would think that they could be recruiting all the time. You see, mathematics and polygamy just don't cooperate. In a polygamy group, there's always more males than there are females. And most of the time, actually, if a man wants to have a bride, he is either going to get one inside the group, which is unlikely, or he'll have to go outside of the group to get one. Or he becomes a lost boy, get kicked out and doesn't get one at all. Now, when the men go outside of the out of their polygamous community, they will go into the surrounding communities, and sure, they'll date girls. And I've heard some pretty sad stories where they've dated girls and maybe even married them, and the girl didn't even know they were getting hooked up with somebody that's involved with a polygamy group, and they find out when it's too late. So yes, Ralph, they could very easily be actively recruiting right now. And if you or someone you know who is watching the show tonight believe that you're being recruited or someone that you know is being recruited, you can give us a call. Our toll-free number is 877-425-9993, and we'll be happy to give you some advice or talk to you about it. Next, we've had several telephone calls and emails, most of them resulting from our few shows that we've done just recently on Joseph Smith and his practice of polygamy and how he got his plural wives. And so I'm going to read three of the questions, but we've had more than three, but we're going to answer them all in this scenario right now. The first one said, "Why are we lying and spreading hate? It's wrong to pretend to be someone they're not." Now, obviously, this person's referring to the dramatization that we did with the girls who dressed up like the pioneer women of the days of Joseph Smith. The next one is a call from a temple worker in St. George called, very upset that we are talking about the prophet Joseph Smith. This caller claims that I am in big trouble. And then we had an email from Julie in Utah, and she said, "You really need to check out your facts a bit better before putting hopelessly pathetic actors on TV and portraying something that didn't happen. I read that you are formerly from a polygamous family, and I am sorry that you had to endure that. You are a very misled woman." Okay, Julie, would you please either email me or call the show tonight and tell me in detail how I'm a misled woman? I really would like to know why you say that. And now the rest of the answers I will give. First of all, our dramatization of Smith's wives. No one was pretending to be someone they're not. We clearly identified before the shows, during the shows, we even put up on the TV screen that we were dramatizing the plural wives of Joseph Smith. We were not being deceitful. We were not being pretentious. We were upfront and honest about the whole thing. For the critic who called them hopelessly pathetic actors, it's kind of nitpicky, I'd say, and we never introduced them as actors. We never said they were. All they were some people who really wanted to share the truth of what happened with Joseph Smith and his polygamy. And you charged that we were talking about things that didn't happen. I ask you, can you prove that statement? How do you know it didn't happen? Have you checked it out? These girls studied historical journals, historical diaries, as written in the book In Sacred Loneliness, written by a Mormon, by the way. He was a Mormon when he wrote it, and he still is. And we did the show, the interviews and the answers, based on those historical documents. And so I would ask you, check it out for yourself before you call someone else a liar. To the temple worker in St. George, would you kindly tell me what we said about Joseph Smith that isn't true? You said that that's what we were doing. What did we say about him that's not true? We ask you to let us know. We beg you, we plead with you to please let us know what we said about him that isn't true. And we also would like to prove your answer by giving us documentation of your own personal research to prove what we said isn't true. The caller warned that I would be sorry for what I was doing. And the only thing that I'm sorry about is that so many people will not obey God and make the test for truth that He has commanded us all to do, and that is prove it. And for those who have accused me of telling lies, again, I'm asking for specifics. What lies have I told? Please tell me. Please be specific. Please prove to me your own research and what you have found out. So prove my lies by proving to me what your truth is. And if you can't or don't prove that I'm lying, then please don't randomly accuse us of lying here on this show. And finally, to those who accuse us of spreading hate, again, I ask specifics. Where and when have I been hateful? I think you just don't want to hear what we have to say, and you don't want to check it out. In Galatians chapter 4, verse 16, Paul the Apostle wrote this, "Am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth?" You just don't want to hear it. That's all it is. There's a couple more I want to read, but I think we'll open up the telephone lines right now. If you want to begin calling in, you can start now. That will give our operators a jump on getting the screening process taken care of, and we'll start taking phone calls. So please call. Our telephone number is 801-973-TV20. We would love to hear from you. We would love to hear your comments and your concerns and your questions regarding the show or about polygamy. A couple of weeks ago, Kathy in Murray asked if a woman today can be sealed in the temple ceremony to Joseph Smith. Well, it isn't likely that a woman could do that in these days, unless, of course, this particular woman is a special woman who happens to have a special authority, general authority perhaps in the church, who would grant that special privilege. And if that did happen, it probably would not be very well known. But generally, no, I don't think that a woman could be randomly sealed to Joseph Smith in a temple ceremony. If somebody knows any different than that, we'd like to hear from you. Just give us a call and tell us what you know about it. Okay, I received an email from Rebecca on April 4th I thought I would share with you. She said, "Dear Doris, I watched the show online from Germany. I love Mormons and I am eager to learn how to minister to them. I never realized what a problem polygamy was until a few years ago from a friend who lived next door to us in a family housing on a military base. I knew he had been raised Mormon and had lived in Salt Lake. He shared his story about how his father became a polygamist when he was a young boy. His story was heartbreaking. His parents ended up separating and his mother died alone. His father's other wives were taken from him, and now he sends off four brides from the Philippines. I agonize in our friend's story, which still resounds in my mind. Thank you for being so open about your life and revealing true Mormonism, which is polygamy, to the world. Much love in Christ, Rebecca." Thank you, Rebecca. I appreciate your email. And yes, polygamy does bring a lot of heartache and a lot of agony in people's lives and homes. And also, I'm grateful that you do care for the Mormon people, the polygamous people. It isn't that we don't like the people, we love them, or we wouldn't even be doing this. It's that we dislike their doctrines that they claim are from God, but the Bible tells otherwise. We want them to check out the truth and find the truth for themselves. And thank you, Rebecca. Okay, I'd like to remind you our phone lines are open if you want to start calling in, 801-973-8820. We had a phone call from Jed, and he says, it's a great show. Will you ever do a show on the Lost Boys? Thank you, Jed. We're glad you enjoy the show. And we have done a show. We've done a show discussing the Lost Boys on December 11th. We did a show in 2008. And we discussed the Lost Boys there. And you can go online at www.whatloveisthis.tv and find the December shows and click on December 11th and you can watch our discussion there. However, I really would like to do a follow-up on that show, and so I could just say right now, if there's somebody watching the program tonight, and perhaps you know of some Lost Boys, or perhaps you are one, I would really like to talk to you, or I'd like some information about the Lost Boys. If you would like to tell your story, I would love to talk to you. You can give us a call at 801-973-TV20, or you can email us tv@aboutpolygamy.com. And we can talk about it. But yes, the Lost Boys are something that's really on our hearts here at this ministry. So thank you, Jed, for your call and for your email. Okay, we hope you're enjoying the mailbag that we have tonight. Sometimes we get email that is laughable. Sometimes it's something I cry about. And sometimes it takes a lot of research to find the answers to. But at any rate, we do appreciate your emails and we do appreciate your phone calls. And we hope that you will continue to respond. I have some questions that I would like to ask our viewers. And perhaps you would like to call tonight in response to some of these questions. The first question I have, I would like to have a response from the Mormon ladies who are watching the show tonight. If the Mormon Church reinstated polygamy, would you call in and tell us how you would feel about your husband taking another wife? If the Mormon Church reinstated polygamy, how would you feel about your husband taking another wife? Would you call in and give us your opinion, your thoughts on that? I have a question for others who believe and study in the Book of Mormon and the Doctrine and Covenants, and of course who have a propensity towards polygamy. In the Book of Mormon, in Jacob chapter 2, verse 24, it says that David and Solomon had many wives and concubines, which thing he said was abominable before me. Doctrine and Covenants 132 says that David and Solomon had many wives, and in that they did not sin. So which is it? Is it an abomination before God, as the Book of Mormon says? Or is it not a sin, as the Doctrine and Covenants says? Please, would someone call in and answer that question? And also, I have a question for the Bible scholars who have a propensity towards polygamy. The Bible says that elders, bishops, and deacons should be the husband of but one wife. So how can anyone honestly believe that polygamy is proper and condoned by God? The Bible says that the bishops and the deacons and the elders should be the husband of one wife. So how can you believe that God would condone polygamy? So that gets you thinking. I hope that we can get some people who will respond to these questions and just let us know your thoughts on some of these issues. Okay, we have an off-the-air question. What is the book that you were quoting from earlier and where can I get it? The book, I've mentioned two books, so I'm not sure which one you're talking about. The first one I mentioned was by Mrs. T.B.H. Stenhouse, and she wrote a book called Exposé on Polygamy in Utah. And the second book I mentioned was In Sacred Loneliness, and that's about the wives of Joseph Smith. You can pick up both of those books at utlm.org. You can go on the internet, utlm.org, And they have a lot of books in their bookstore there. You can order both of those books online. Okay, I'd like to share another question. Now, this comes up quite a bit in the emails that I receive and responses from our viewers. And this is an email that I received a few weeks ago from Carrie. She said, excuse me, "The new and everlasting covenant is referring to the sealing of men and women and their families. The new and everlasting covenant is not polygamy. Where does it say in the Doctrine and Covenants that polygamy is the new and everlasting covenant? It doesn't, because that is not the case. Don't make things up, please. Just tell the truth. I believe that you are aware that we refer to sealings as the new and everlasting covenant, yet you are still putting out this misinformation. That is not an honest person who is only trying to help others what they would do." Well, Carrie, I think that you're a victim of somebody who has redefined Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants, because it has been redefined. If you went back into the historical documents, and I'm talking about actual historical documents, you can even go to the Journal of Discourses and read what some of the sermons were from some of the men during those days, and they would refer to polygamy and the new and everlasting covenant in the same breath. They would identify it as the new and everlasting covenant. I want to read from a publication that I received in the mail from a ministry here in Salt Lake called the Utah Lighthouse Ministry. They send out what they call the Salt Lake City Messenger, strictly historical. Everything is documented. And this is what they have said in this issue. "Mormons today seem to view the Doctrine and Covenants Section 132 as mainly relating to a man being sealed to his wife in an eternal marriage, with plural marriage only an outdated appendage. The early Mormons viewed it just the opposite, declaring that plural marriage was necessary for exaltation. In Joseph Smith's day, eternal marriage was synonymous with plural marriage. Curiously, Joseph Smith wasn't even sealed to his legal wife, Emma, until May 28, 1843, after he had already been sealed to 24 women. If Smith's concern was to be married eternally to his wife, why did he put so many women ahead of her? It seems obvious that the issue was getting her to accept plural marriage. Once she agreed to the new doctrine, Smith had her sealed to him." So I would suggest, Carrie, that you do your own study on that, your own personal study. Just look it up, because the new and everlasting covenant and polygamy in those early Mormon days was synonymous. I have a quote from Heber C. Kimball that I would like. It's in the Journal of Discourses, Volume 5, page 203. We have open telephone lines here, folks. If you would like to call in, we would love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. Heber C. Kimball made the following remark. Now remember, this comes from him, not me. He said, "Some quietly listen to those who speak against the plurality of wives and against almost every principle that God has revealed. Such persons have a half a dozen devils with them all the time. You might as well deny Mormonism and turn away from it as to oppose the plurality of wives. Let the presidency of this church and the 12 apostles and all the authorities unite and say with one voice that they will oppose the doctrine, and all of them will be damned," end quote. Now, if Heber C. Kimball was truly talking by God's direction, then all of the subsequent LDS presidents, all of the subsequent 12 apostles, and the general authorities since the manifesto have been damned, because they've all talked against it. And he said They have devils with them, and they'll be damned if they do. So, my question is this, however. How can polygamy ever have been right and proper and righteous when God has repeatedly commanded against it? Either polygamy is right all the time, or it's wrong all the time. It cannot possibly be both. We've talked earlier that God never changes, and His salvation plan has never changed either. And so, what do you think about Heber C. Kimball's remarks? Is there something in here that you would also like to redefine? Okay. We have some phone calls lit up here, but they just haven't come on yet, so we're just waiting for them to come on the screen. It looks like we have one coming up. Okay. Cody from Ogden. Hello, Cody.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Cody. You're on the air.
Actually, Enoch.
Enoch? Oh, well, I'm sorry. It says Cody on the screen, so somebody's mixed up. But Enoch, thank you for calling. What's your question?
I just had a comment to Senator Brigham Young that grew up in Mormonism, and my comment is I think it would be helpful to people if you could distinguish the difference between biblical polygamy and the spiritual wife doctrine. I think it's very confusing to people when you just use the general term polygamy, because they are two very different things.
Well, you're right. The practice of polygamy in the Bible and the practice of modern-day polygamy and even early Mormon polygamy were different. You are right. However, we have done several different shows on the difference between polygamy then and now. But I will briefly go over some of it tonight. First of all, the patriarchs, Abraham and Jacob, practiced polygamy. And of course, we know King David did and Solomon did, and we can read in the book of Judges where many of the people there practiced polygamy. The prophets in the Bible, however, never practiced polygamy. They didn't take multiple wives. But the culture was different then. God actually didn't even give the law until Exodus. And so there, although his perfect marriage was symbolized with Adam and Eve as one wife, one man, one woman, and so his perfect plan for marriage wasn't polygamy. However, the culture started doing that, beginning with Lamech in chapter 4 of Genesis in the Bible. Polygamy was not practiced in the Bible at any time for salvation. Never. They took concubines. Sometimes they took them because that's the only way that the man could have a child if his first wife was barren, in the case of Abraham and Sarah. And in the case of Hannah in 1 Samuel, she was barren, the first wife wasn't. The polygamy groups today, polygamy with Joseph Smith was a threat. If you don't practice polygamy, you cannot be exalted. You cannot go to heaven. There's a big difference in the two. God never commanded polygamy. It was never His perfect will for that to happen. Does that help you?
Well, that's the point that I'm making here. But you shouldn't say modern-day polygamy, because there's a lot of non-Mormon polygamous groups that really only look at polygamy, for the purpose of raising seed, as they did in the Old Testament. And my point is, the spiritual wife doctrine that grew out of polygamy is different, because that teaches that you have to have multiple wives in order to receive the highest exaltation.
Right.
And interestingly enough, even within Mormon scripture, if you back out section 132, which is very questionable, all of the history behind it is very questionable.
Right.
If you back that out, you cannot justify the spiritual wife doctrine using the Book of Mormon or the Doctrine and Covenants. In fact, the Doctrine and Covenants, when the higher law was given in section 42, it made it very clear that a man could only have one wife, and it repeated that in section 49. So even modern revelation testifies against section 132. the whole concept of the spiritual wife doctrine, which teaches you need to have multiple wives to become exalted.
That's exactly right, and it's been twisted. It was twisted when Joseph Smith wrote Section 132. He was practicing polygamy, spiritual wifery, or whatever you want to call it. He was practicing it for years, and at the same time denying that he was doing so. You know, so we know that the whole thing was deceitful and was done in coercion and behind the scenes where people didn't know what was going on. Okay, I thank you for your call. And so you're Enoch?
Yeah.
Okay, and you're from Idaho?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, all right, thank you, Enoch. Okay, line 3, we have Cody from Ogden. Hello, Cody. Hello, Cody.
Yes?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you have a question?
Yeah, I just was curious. You'd mentioned the Utah Lighthouse Ministry.
Yes.
And I was just curious where that information comes from. Is the Lighthouse Ministry a local thing based out of Salt Lake?
Yes, it is.
Never heard of the Lighthouse Ministry
before.
Yeah,
they've been here for 30-plus years.
For 30-plus years?
Yeah, they've done a lot of research. It's all documented. All the footnotes is there. It's all the references are there. Highly documented. Very, very good research has been done. And you can go to utlm.org and find out what you need to know about them.
Okay, I was just curious. I'd never heard of them and was just curious where you'd receive that information from. So I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Is there anything else that we can answer tonight, Cody?
Nope, that should do it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh, good night.
Good night.
Okay, line 2, Anonymous. Ooh, hello?
Hi, Doris.
Hello. You're on the air. You're on the air.
Hi, Doris, I just wanted to answer your question about if there were any LDS ladies who would agree to polygamy if the ban were lifted.
Yes.
And I can't speak for myself, but I asked my aunt, who is LDS, currently married to a bishop, I asked her the same question, and she told me no, and that she actually thinks that Joseph Smith made the whole thing up and in another kind of under her breath stated that she may go to hell for thinking that. And my aunt is actually, I think she's in her early 70s. So I have to think that if 70-year-old LDS bishop's wife would think no, that there are generations that would not accept it.
That they would not accept their husband practicing polygamy. Now, are you LDS?
No.
You're not LDS. Okay. Do you have LDS friends who that you ever talked to about this issue?
I have talked to just mostly my relatives who are LDS.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say that I also talked to my brother-in-law about this, and he said, because I was asking my sister, how would you feel about that if you had to be, you know, you had to share, you know, your husband, and, you know, she said, well, I would be the first wife, so somehow that kind of elevated her status a little bit, even though technically he was married before and was married and divorced. But he also told me that, you know, that there's no, you know, that God can decide whether he will require that or not in this life or in the next life, that we just don't know if that's going to be an expectation. So I have to assume that there's a lot of people who don't expect that that will be required.
Well, I guess the quandary that I get in, and that is with the modern day polygamy groups compared to the Mormon now, the Mormons actually have pulled away from original Mormon doctrine, so they would be the apostates if you wanted to technically look at it that
way.
But it was required. And that's
they may not practice polygamy, but it is part of their religion. I mean, it's still an LDS doctrine, and it's funny because they'll start looking around if you mention that.
That's true. But again, it goes back to that the earlier mention that we were making about Section 132. They redefined Section 132.
Yes.
And now to them, it doesn't mean polygamy, where 100 years ago, it definitely meant polygamy. You know, so it is a quandary. But I do appreciate your calling. And if
I think it's interesting. I would like to hear, I hope that somebody who is actually practicing LDS person would call in and speak on that.
That would be interesting to hear from them.
Thanks, Doris. I love Thursday nights watching your show.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Good night. Okay, we have another anonymous call from Utah, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
I was wondering, why do you think during the time when they would not allow, the Mormon Church would not allow black people, African Americans, to hold the priesthood, and then all of a sudden you had all the activists, race against the racism and all that, and then just all of a sudden they had a revelation from God that they could hold a spot in the church, and it just seems like it was more or less convenient for what the people wanted than the beliefs.
Well, it often is that, exactly that. Our show does deal with polygamy, not with the black issue. However, we're going to do a show about polygamy and how the blacks fit in with that in the future. But we do appreciate your phone call, and thank you.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh, good night. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show right now. We want to thank our telephone callers for participating in the program. We want to thank you for watching. I do receive many questions and emails from people wondering why we use the Bible exclusively instead of the Doctrine and Covenants and the Pearl of Great Price as references on the show. And we do understand why they would ask that question. However, it's clear that in the Bible, we can discover, and it's only in the Bible, that we can discover God's true salvation plan. And so it's spiritual suicide not to make use of your Bible. Next week, we're going to explore the reasons that we can and do trust the Bible exclusively for spiritual truths. And to that end, our guest is going to be Pastor Ross Anderson. He's the senior pastor of Wasatch Church in Roy. He's the author of a recently released book entitled Understanding the Book of Mormon. And we're going to discuss the question, how do we know we can trust the Bible? And as we close tonight, I'd like to remind our viewers who depend upon achieving salvation by your own personal good works, Jesus Christ is the Savior. He's the one who knows how we're saved. He's the one that brought salvation to us. And it is not by the works that we can do, it's by the works that He has already done. And that works is to believe in Him, John 6:29. Now, is that too simple? Is that much too convenient? Well, it certainly wasn't easy for Jesus. He's the one who died on the cross, making it possible for us to be saved by grace through faith exclusively. Do you know the only unforgivable sin is to try to work for your salvation? We hope you'll take His gift tonight, and thank you for being here tonight. See you next week.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.